Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FoxBet. And then there were two. What I mean is two Bet the Board NFL podcasts remaining this season, with four NFL teams vying for a trip to Miami to fight for the Lombardi Trophy. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, a man who needs no introduction, the one, the only, Payne Insider.
Two more to go. Counting them down. Big games this weekend.
I just wonder, Payne, I mean, do you have a little tick sheet in front of you that when we start the season previews in August, you just start marking them off one after another, going, all right, one step closer to getting to February, one step closer to not having to deal with Todd, and it's inch by inch like a field position game?
I'd be smart, but no, I'm a positive person. I love coming on these, talking a little bit, as much as people probably think I don't. I like breaking down these games, and I think there's a lot of times we go back and forth, and you think of something that you probably hadn't prior, and then you dig into that a little bit, and you uncover something, you know?
No doubt about it. Now, the four teams that are still out there playing.
Everyone, by the way, was very intrigued about this appointment from last week.
Which appointment? Your appointment?
The one I had to attend. Yeah, it wasn't like a doctor's appointment.
I think a lot of people are always intrigued. You're an international man of mystery that folks know very little about. And it's almost like the puppeteer behind the curtain, the wizard in the Wizard of Oz. I'm trying to think of the best way to try and set this up.
No. Well, no. It wasn't like a doctor's appointment. So for those who asked about the health, so far so good, I think. I believe. Yeah. Oh, nothing that I'm aware of.
Such an open-ended question and or comment on a variety of levels. But that's
I could use more turmeric in my system, apparently.
Apparently, that's what I was told yesterday by the doc myself, as an anti-inflammatory there to try and keep me young at heart, keep the ticker healthy with the football season we've been forced to endure.
I thought fish oil helped that. No,
well, I think there's that, you know, vitamin D. I mean, it's just a laundry list of things that are out there. So the more pills you pop with organic or holistic supplements or however you want to try and spin it, probably creates a model of health, so to speak.
How many pills can you take a day and be like healthy? Can your system like handle like 74 pills? I feel like when you get older, you gotta take a bunch of shit.
I mean, I've seen some of my elderly family members. They walk around with a pill box. I mean, you got the days there. You got like 19 pills you got to take. Blood pressure, cholesterol, stress. I mean, I have no idea what the hell's in some of those things.
Yeah, stress. That's a good one.
You can always walk around with a bottle of Tito's, too, if that works for you. But that may be a little bit more abrasive. But two championship games on the docket for us to get to this weekend. And just to kind of set things up, when you look at some of the numbers since 2013, home teams have actually fared quite well in this particular round, compiling a 10-2 straight-up record. They've gone 8-4 against the number with an average margin of victory, 17.3 points, and a turnover differential plus 16. So I think that further illustrates why when you look at the FoxBet futures, you're looking at Kansas City right now, a 5-4 favorite to win the Super Bowl. San Francisco behind them at right around plus $1.60. The Packers at plus $6.50, and the Titans at 7-1. Payne, there's a little bit of a wrench here, though. I think we're going to throw our listeners off, because we adhere to rotation order around these parts, which means we have to start with the late game if we're keeping with consistency.
Whatever you would like to do.
No. You tried to throw me under the bus earlier this season for trying to diverge from the format and template that we've adhered to since our podcast inception years ago. So we'll start late in the afternoon in the Bay Area.
I was trying to be nice.
Okay.
But I was trying to be nice.
When did that start?
I'm always nice.
You know what would be nice? If you walked around or bet the board corporate meetings and handed out $100 bills like Odell Beckham did to the LSU players.
It's fake, apparently.
Yeah. Not if you listen to Joe Burrow, but if you listen to the LSU athletic department. Clearly,
Joe Burrow's going to be a legend rolling around smoking stogies.
Got to be careful.
Let me turn that down. The bat line is ringing here.
The man says he doesn't like Skyline Chili. That doesn't exactly endear yourself to a lot of the Bengals faithful. As a native Ohio kid. Actually, you know what? Before we get into that,
I'm not big on Skyline Chili either. I'm not a chili guy. Very picky with my food.
I don't think I've ever actually had Skyline chili, honestly.
I'm just not a chili guy.
Now that I think about it. But all right, let's get into the games. And if we can want to comment on the national championship, we can get that to that at the tail end of the program. San Francisco, 7.5-point favorite at Foxbet. Total on the game, 45. We know about the first meeting between these two teams. Green Bay went to the Bay Area, was absolutely beaten like a drum on Sunday Night Football. And when you look at teams to lose by 20-plus points in the regular season and face the same opponent in conference championship during that same postseason, 3-14 straight up and just 5-12 against the spread in the rematch, Green Bay looking to be just the third team since 1990 to make the Super Bowl despite being outgained on the season. But don't tell that to Packers fans, Payne, because yards don't matter. It's all about points and third down conversions, in case you were studying that at home. When we look at San Francisco...
Turnover in the mix, too.
Yeah, I mean, apparently. I've just kind of given up on Green Bay fans out there. I know we got a couple of loyal listeners that are honest and objective about
it's
it.
It's a great organization, great franchise. It's a fun team.
Their fan base has become insufferable. Absolutely insufferable. So when we look at this game, and I think you said it eloquently before we even jumped on, hey, we have four teams that are left. We know what these four teams are. We know what they're all about. They haven't been able to really reinvent themselves. They made minor tweaks to obviously get to this point in the season. Green Bay and San Francisco, no strangers to playing this late in the year with so much on the line. Eighth time in the last quarter century that they'll meet in the playoffs. But when you look at the matchups here, we can start in a variety of different ways. I mean, where is this game won or lost? Is it as simple as Aaron Rodgers has to go out there and be absolutely perfect because this 49ers team is more talented just about everywhere on the football field?
It's not a good matchup. No. I mean, I'm interested to see where this line goes. I have no idea. I know there is one person that likes Green Bay. They do have influence in the market. I just don't know. Listen, I think it's very easy to say, like, well, back in week 12, these teams met. The line was 3. How could it be 7.5 now? And to your point, like, trust me, I've been digging around, trying to uncover and find some matchup advantages where I could make a case for the value side in Green Bay. I've struggled. If you remember that game, Green Bay was coming off a bye. Had 2 weeks to prepare for San Francisco. The Niners had a target on their back at that point. They were being hunted. They weren't running up on anybody. They weren't surprising anybody at that point. So when I go back and look at Green Bay and what they did, extra time to prepare, more time for LaFleur to implement a game plan specific to his opponent, enhance his script, which has been the best part of his offense. Green Bay's offense ran 70 snaps in that first meeting, 2.8 yards per play and a 31% success rate. Aaron Rodgers did not record a single explosive pass in that game. D Ford did not play. Quan Alexander did not play. I don't see a matchup advantage here for the Packers. Aaron Jones has to be a factor on early downs. We talked about this last week in the Vikings game. Got to be able to find some room on the edges. That's where San Francisco is most vulnerable. Aaron Rodgers has to be a thrower of the football on second down. This is, by the way, making its rounds through national television. Apparently, we did a good shtick on that last week. Passing on third downs is a impossible task against the 49ers defense. And it's one thing that we hammered home. The Vikings ended last week with a 20% success rate and the average 4.4 yards per pass on third down. This is not something you're going to survive in. So it needs to be Aaron Jones on early downs if you are running it outside. It needs to be Aaron Rodgers throwing it on first down. It needs to be throwing on second down if you're backed up. You can't just waste it down there because you are not going to survive on third down. You look at the matchups. I don't know if there is a game breaker for Green Bay. Devontae Adams is fantastic, obviously. What is he going to do against the secondary? Sherman hasn't been a guy that's decided to travel a bunch this year. But there really isn't much in the way of pass-catching options past Devontae Adams. So I think we're going to see a defensive game plan geared towards stopping him. Aside from Aaron Jones, there's really not much else there. Now, the Green Bay Packers offensive line has been certainly better in pass protection on the edges. Their guards struggle. Billy Turner is a guy that I'm quite familiar with. Wasn't even very good in his prime down here in Miami. He's now a starting guard for Green Bay. So they're weak with their guards. Let's see if we see a similar situation now that D Ford is healthy. And you compare him with Bosa. Maybe we see some inside stunts. Maybe we see him lined up over the guard in the center in certain pass rushing situations here. That's not going to bode very well for the Green Bay Packers offensive line. I don't really see many advantages here for this Green Bay offense. And again, to the point, if you had 2 weeks to prepare and devise a game plan for this defense when they were not healthy, I don't know what you're going to do here. And San Francisco does have an extra day. I just don't see advantages here for this Green Bay offense, and I'm not sure their success is going to improve much here in this go-round.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Davante Adams. We know what he did last week against Seattle, but I think that had more to do with the Seahawks' stubbornness than anything else. 8 catches, 160 yards, 7 touchdown catches in the last 7 games. And we saw the Vikings earlier this postseason go, you know what? When we go into New Orleans, we're going to make anyone not named Michael Thomas beat us. You almost feel like San Francisco has to have the exact same mentality. Aaron Jones will give him his 3 or 4 yards a carry if that's what he wants to take, but Davante Adams won't be that guy. So it's Jimmy Graham step up. It's Alan Lazard who's dealing with an injury in his own right. Marquez Valdes-Scantling. I'm right there with you. I don't know where Green Bay goes to try and make some of those plays. Now, I know it's a limited sample size as well. Rodgers, 1-2 in NFC Championship games, has subpar numbers by his abnormally high standards, but on the playoff, in the playoffs, on the road, Aaron Rodgers hasn't exactly gone out there and put forth superhuman efforts. We can hit the rewind button when we saw him in Atlanta, a game where they were beaten 44-21 with a much more dynamic offensive cast of playmakers. When I look at this game, Payne, I think a lot of people may gravitate towards the experience factor. Hey, Rodgers has been here before, 17 postseason starts, Garoppolo only making his second. I mean, is that a concern on the other side of the ball that you worry about the 49ers' ability to consistently move the football? I mean, Garoppolo wasn't asked to do much against the Vikings. Only threw it 6 times in the second half. They ran the football extremely well. Will they have the same success running the football, or do they use the pass here to set up the run, knowing that Green Bay has been vulnerable to the big play, and you want to keep their pass rush a little bit off balance?
I think San Francisco has success moving the ball offensively, and there is this little battle, right, of Kyle Shanahan versus Mike Pettine. Kyle Shanahan actually worked under Mike Pettine in Cleveland, so there is that familiarity factor there. But San Francisco seemed to do quite all right in that first matchup earlier this season. And when you just look how San Francisco operates offensively, they've really given defenses like this trouble. And when you look at what Green Bay is vulnerable and susceptible to, it's exactly what San Francisco does. We've talked about this virtually all season. I know we kind of, I think, brought it to light in the public during the Carolina game against Green Bay, I think, is my memory serves me correct. Play action kills the Packers defense. Pre-snap motion kills the Packers defense. San Francisco is number one in using pre-snap motion by a long mile, top 5 in play action rate. I don't see a scenario where Green Bay's defense is overly effective here. And if you look last week, against Seattle, the Packers had 5 sacks. They came on the 28 non-play action dropbacks. 0 sacks when Seattle decided to pass with play action. When you look at Seattle, didn't use play action enough, but when they did, 77% success rate, average 10.8 yards per pass, 39% success rate, 7.6 yards per attempt when they didn't use play action. Throw between the numbers, right? Green Bay cannot cover tight ends. I think Kittle, if he is healthy, and heck, even if he's not and it's Dwelly or whoever, you're going to have success throwing the ball over the middle of the field against Green Bay's defense. You're going to have success hitting your tight end. Run more outside zone. I think that will be an interesting element here with San Francisco. They like to run outside zone. The matchup here is just not very good. I tried to make every single case I could, and this is a game that I spent a good 2 days on saying to myself, the line's a tad inflated here. It is. It's a touch inflated. Let me see if I can make a case for Green Bay. I have not come up with a single thing. Not one thing. And so it's not going to support. There's a dramatic coaching disadvantage. anywhere you look, there's no real edge here for Green Bay. And I think San Francisco, and we're sitting here talking about value. We liked San Francisco a little bit last week. We were just very protective of some of the information that we had coming in on the Vikings. And we missed that opportunity with San Francisco last week. I don't see a situation here where San Francisco does not win this game. And at least early on, guys, I know we're getting out laying the 7. There had been a little bit of a differing opinion from another guy, as I alluded to, that had some market influence, and that's kind of why we're back down towards kind of like soft 7.5. I don't know where this is going to go, but I think maybe when you incorporate all these guys coming back for San Francisco and why they were, Todd, when you think about this, why they're being downgraded a little bit down the stretch, it's like, okay, their defense came back to life. It's not as good as it was early in the season. And to that point, I would agree a little bit, but they got injured as the difficulty of opposing offenses increased. You could almost make a case that San Francisco could be a little undervalued because of these guys returning on the defensive side of the ball. Those are three huge key cogs in Tart and Quan Alexander and D Ford, and it's on each level of the defense. You know, one thing that we've kind of always talked about, and it's this cliche term now throughout the industry, it's like cluster injuries. The guy who invented that kind of phrase and applied it to sports betting, it was more so talking about the offensive line. That's initially where this came from, the offensive line. And because it was already a position that wasn't being valued in the market when you had multiple guys, it became a huge edge. To me, when you have a coach like Kyle Shanahan, he could probably scheme if he had one hole, right? He's going to be able to cover up one hole. But when you have a key cog missing from every single level of your defense, I don't think we factored that in enough. And getting those three guys back has just been instrumental to this defense. It's been huge. And I think they show up well again here. Just a very bad matchup.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, like you said. And I think the one thing that surprised me, and we don't always pay a ton of attention to this because I think it becomes a little bit of fool's gold or a trap that people fall into. When you look at some of the betting percentages, I'm stunned to see pretty good two-way action, at least early on. Of course, we're recording this Thursday morning, and that's subject to change. But about a 55-45 split in San Francisco's favor, because much like you, dug into this, always want to try and make a case for the underdog this time of year. Especially knowing that underdogs of 7 points or more have been pretty good bets in conference championship games to cover, even if they don't win outright all the time, and arrived at a lot of the same conclusions that I just can't find a way Green Bay stays in this football game, let alone wins it, unless Jimmy Garoppolo treats the football like a hand grenade and makes poor decisions in the passing game, knowing he's been a little bit susceptible to trying to pick up linebackers when they drop back into coverage.
That is the only way this game can stay close. And that might be something that's a little bit interesting. Playing this game potentially live, okay? Green Bay, right? And I think, again, and maybe it's just my bias towards some of these metrics and what I've found, it's almost as if you could play San Francisco live multiple ways. We know Green Bay this season has had to get out early. We saw it again last week. Thank God they got out early. Thank God Brian Schottenheimer threw up all over himself early on in that game. And Green Bay built this lead and just held on for dear freaking life. Green Bay has to get out here to have a chance. And it's almost as if Green Bay gets out, you probably have a good shot at getting a much better line with San Francisco in running. If Green Bay doesn't get out, you probably have a good shot playing San Francisco at a similar number as the pregame, seeing Green Bay didn't get out, and they're probably not going to have a chance in this game if they don't get out to a lead. I just don't see much here for Green Bay. And it's been a team, again, we've been down on all season. When you look at their entire landscape, you would be betting a team here that has been outgained on the season going against arguably the very best team in the league right now on the road. I just don't. It's tough to make a case for Green Bay. I wish I could have. I really do.
I have no problem not making a case for Green Bay. I mean, it's a team that I've taken shots at, and I'm not going to take anything away from their performance to get to this point in the season. But Ultimately, you have to play up to what your numbers suggest, and unless Green Bay can do it yet again with smoke and mirrors, and Aaron Rodgers puts together miraculous performances on third down, I think Green Bay's in real big trouble here. Do want to get your take real quick before we close the book on this game. Last week, Seattle, third and five, right around with the 35-40-yard line. Pete Carroll drops Russell Wilson back. Of course, he gets sacked. It's fourth and 11. Seattle punts, never gets the football back. You do more analytics, you do more probability than I do. It's obviously one of your core strengths in all of this. Is there a case to be made that Seattle made the wrong decision electing to punt with the very real chance they weren't going to get the football back, where instead of just going for it, hey, worst case scenario, you give up a field goal, it's still a one-score game, that the book says Pete Carroll should have taken a shot, trusted Russell Wilson to pick up the first down there?
I think I'm, in that situation, always going to trust Russell Wilson versus my defense. And again, that can distort a little bit, because if you have an elite defense or your quarterback isn't Russell Wilson, maybe it's a different mindset, but that's not the case for specifically Seattle. They have Russell Wilson. Where we've kind of talked and told them to hit on last week was deep passing. That's kind of where Green Bay is a little bit vulnerable. So in that specific situation with that exact team, I'm definitely keeping it in Russell Wilson's hands without a question.
Gotcha. I mean, you just watch it, and there's a couple coaching decisions that were made, not only there, one that impacted the Chiefs game that I know we'll get to. We break this next game down, but I always like to get your thoughts, and I'm sure the listeners do as well, trying to figure out how that strategy plays out. And we know in the heat of the moment, sometimes you make irrational decisions. Just feel you want to go down with the ball in your best player's hands rather than letting Aaron Rodgers do what he always does, extend drives on third down, and ultimately finding Jimmy Graham for the game-sealing play. That we can say was or wasn't a first down, but I do have to give folks some credit. It looked like the line on TV they were showing us wasn't quite official compared to where the markers were set.
Gotcha. Because I thought he was a little short, too. It looked like his helmet barely even crossed the yellow line there.
I was right there with you, and then went back and looked at some of the other angles and some of the pictures that circulated through social media, and it looked like that yellow line was probably about a half yard in advance from where the sticks were. But either way, Green Bay went out there, never gave Seattle the ball back, and here we are with the NFC Championship game we have.
Meanwhile, it's not a good Seattle defense. We were kind of waiting for them as they got healthier to like progress. We're like, okay, Ziggy Ansah, he's going to really turn it on the second half of the season. He was basically just trying to add the 15 pounds back that he lost in the offseason after all the surgeries. It was like, okay, Clowney's been dealing with some things. The secondary isn't completely healthy. They're going to get this thing figured out. Jerron Reed missing the first six games with suspension. It just never happened. They actually got worse.
Trey Flowers, baby. Trey Flowers out there attempting to make plays.
I know, there's a lot of people clamoring for Griffin to shadow Devontae after a while. And too late, I guess.
Well, they'll have the entire offseason to think about it. Maybe Seattle will make better decisions should they play the Packers next year on a meaningful stage. But into the AFC we go. And this, of course, the early game at Arrowhead, where Kansas City will look to get back to the Super Bowl for the first time in 50 years, first time in franchise history. They're in back-to-back AFC Conference Championships. And when you look at the number here, Kansas City, a 7-point favorite, total in the game 52.5 at FoxBet. The Titans looking to become the first team to win four straight road games in the Super Bowl era, but dug into some numbers, and I have to thank the Fox research team for pointing these out to me, Payne. We share these numbers because I think it's a unique picture that it paints. It's not by any means a blueprint to what's going to be successful. But teams scoring 50 points in a playoff game the following week are just 1-6 straight up and 1-6 against the spread. That would apply to Kansas City. But even more staggering, if you go back to 1995, teams scoring 40 points in a playoff game the last 32 times it's happened, 12-20 straight up, 6-26 against the spread. If those trends are going to continue, Tennessee's got to figure out how to score at least 30 points in this game, in my opinion. When you look at Tennessee and the way they should attack Kansas City's defense, everyone will talk about Derrick Henry, who's gone for 180 yards or more in each of the last three games. But does Ryan Tannehill actually have to throw the football this week for more than 85 yards for the Titans to be successful?
160 total yards so far in the playoffs. The run truthers are loving life right now.
Extremely efficient. Let's put it that way. When you look at his yards per game compared to where he ranks from a yards per completion, yards per attempt, and passer rating so far this season.
So you mentioned a trend, and I know we talked about another one that was a little bit off air. You texted me. What was it? Is it 50, scoring 50 or more or something along those lines?
Yeah, it's basically the thought process that teams that score 40 or in this case, even 50, just can't replicate that kind of offensive effort, or the public perception plays such a big role in the way the number is set in the game directly following it.
I think that's probably a good starting point, right? The number. To me, we're always trying to figure out why that trend is happening. Is there something to it? Can it be explained? And what does the actual trend suggest? And I think to your point and to this specific game, everyone's watching these like standalone playoff games, right? And humans overreact. It's recency bias. And I think the market gets a little distorted that next game after they hang all these points. They win in impressive fashion. I've spent, I think, more time digging into this trend than I probably have any other trend. And it certainly applies to Kansas City here. But when I look at this, I don't think it's actually being factored into this number. Like, I would actually make a case that this line is deflated. I don't think we've seen inflation in the market on Kansas City because they scored 50 or more last week. And I think it's, you know, lazy to reference sometimes the look ahead line, and you know, we're not out of that realm. But when you look at this, the look ahead line last week was double digits. And if you even make it simpler, I don't think anyone coming into last week had Tennessee power rated higher than Houston, right? And Houston was catching 10. And I think if you take it one step further, if you remember back when these two teams played in week 10, game day, you could have taken Tennessee plus 6 at home in Mahomes' first game back from the dislocated knee. So it's very tough when you look at that and you see, even right now, some sevens in the market at Arrowhead with a healthy Mahomes, that this line could be 7. So I don't know if that trend is going to apply here, because I don't see inflation in this number. Do you?
No, I mean, it makes a ton of sense. And that's why, you know, we lay some of these angles out. I think when you have these standalone games, as you mentioned, it's always worth trying to unpack every element, not only the on-the-field X's and O's matchups, coaching, but everything else as far as market perception is concerned. And maybe it's because of the way Kansas City started against Houston that you don't see that. The fact that they were down 24-0 before scoring 41 unanswered points, or the Titans have become, I don't want to say a trendy underdog, because it's not quite the case with about a 60-40 bet split early on, but the Titans have opened people's eyes when you look at the run they've been on. Beating the Houston Texans, ultimately the AFC South champions, to get into the postseason. Beating the defending Super Bowl champions, the New England Patriots, outright in one of the uglier football games you're going to see. And then following it up, beating the, you know, unbeatable Baltimore Ravens, in doing so at their own game, hitting them in the mouth physically and running the football, that maybe people are starting to gravitate towards the Titans as being a team that, hey, look, they're no longer the Cinderella, the little engine that could, trying to be the first six seed to get to the Super Bowl since Green Bay back in 2010, that this team actually has some merit. But when you dig a little bit deeper and you reference the first game, Tennessee has one major glaring weakness, especially on the defensive side. And unless they're going to go out there and get Ronnie Lott in his prime, they're going to get Deion Sanders out there as a coverage cornerback. I mean, you brought it to my attention. How do they possibly look to slow down Kansas City and that vertical passing game if they get going?
Well, the first thing is, right, you're going to use Derrick Henry on offense, and we can get to that side of the ball after. But I do think, kind of to your point, the Chiefs' offense could be their best defense. If Mahomes and company can come out early and score, you have a chance to take Tennessee out of their comfort zone offensively. And like we said last week, I don't see anything that would suggest the Chiefs struggle to score here. Kansas City likes to throw the ball, obviously. They should. They have a brilliant mind in Andy Reid, a quarterback like Mahomes, and weapons all over the place. And we've seen the Titans struggle to stop the pass. We've kind of chronicled that all season long. And if you just look at some of the metrics, Tennessee's 21st in defensive pass efficiency, 23rd in passing success rate defense. So bottom third, basically, across the board defending pass. And you dig into their schedule. One of the 10 easiest schedules of passing defenses, or of passing offenses faced. One of the 10 easiest schedules of explosive passing offenses faced. There's going to be advantages here, I think, for the Chiefs offense, for Mahomes. You're looking at pressure rates. Tennessee's got the worst pressure rate of all the four remaining teams left in the playoffs. They didn't really get pressure last week either. I think it's also important to talk about a couple of these underlying things within this game. And basically what truly happened defensively last week against Baltimore. To me, you look at this a little bit, and I'm not saying Tennessee is going to get blown out here. I'm not implying that. But there could be a situation where it's like finally, you know, 4 road games in 4 weeks. The defense was on the field last week against Baltimore, 92 snaps. This defense has been playing playoff-like games with more intensity and meaning since week 12, right? You just wonder if we see one of these games where just the wheels completely come off. I go back and watch last week's game and how it unfolded, and sure, they did a fantastic job holding the Ravens to 12 points. And I think, Todd, like we've heard all week, and probably like our listeners at this point, we've heard, you know, the Titans defense, they went back and they copied the Chargers game plan from last year's playoff games to stop Lamar, and they did such a fantastic job copying that. Maybe. I can tell you, looking at the numbers, the Chargers defense only gave up 229 yards in that game, not 530. And, you know, the Chargers only gave up 3.9 yards per play and a 31% success rate. Baltimore put up 530, 5.8 yards per play, a 47% success rate. Baltimore had 8 trips inside the Titans 36. 8 trips inside the Titans 36. The defensive performance to me was a little phony. They had all the swing play turnovers. It wasn't like Lamar dropped back, you know, on third and long from his own 35 where he throws a 40-yard pass that gets picked off, right? And the Titans are starting at their own 25. No, it's throwing green and red zone turnovers. It's getting stopped on fourth and one twice. This Baltimore offense was a rhythm offense. And to me, they weren't quite in rhythm after taking 3 weeks off, something that I think we both said was a bad idea at the time in Baltimore shouldn't have done. I thought even some of the Baltimore coaches showed some rust, Todd, not using their timeouts properly before the half. The fourth and one run plays had no imagination. They didn't spread out the defense. There wasn't a run pass option, you know, implemented in those plays. There wasn't even an option where the running back could have been the guy that had the ball. It was literally, let's have our 190-pound quarterback be a physical runner behind our backup center.
Is he even 190 pounds?
No, he's 212. I don't think he's 212. That's what the program says. I don't think he is, but
seems generous.
You get my point. He's a speed guy. He's a make you miss guy. He's not necessarily a power guy. So when you have him on fourth and one, when you aren't spreading out your offense, when you aren't really providing any element of surprise here within your RPO attack, it's just quarterback running behind a backup center. And you think about the Titans defense, where they're best, it's with Jonathan Simmons, it's with Jarrell Casey, it's right up the middle. So I think there was a little panic from Baltimore. They weren't used to playing from behind. Listen, I get it. The Titans are hot. They're playing well. They could very well cover this number. But to me, again, the values on Kansas City here, if you count the 2 fourth-and-one stops last week, like you should be doing, and it's very important, right, when you're looking at like turnover metrics and things of that nature, like going back and manually looking at some of these box scores or being able to parse out your data where fourth and one stops, fourth and short stops, and plus those should be counted as turnovers. They aren't in your generic scores. But the Titans are +6 in turnovers the last 2 games. And again, none of them are like your run-of-the-mill turnover. They're all massive swing turnovers. That stuff isn't repeatable. Even at the very onset of this game, Todd, right? Like Tennessee's like, we're going to get the ball first. We're going to be bullies. We're going to run it right down your throat. Nope, didn't work. Had to punt. And then Baltimore goes down and they're moving the ball and they're likely going to score there on the opening drive. Andrews is wide open. It's a slight overthrow. It's probably a catch that he usually makes. He'd even admit to that. And Bird picks it off. And again, it's not like where he like goes to a knee. It's him returning it and setting him Tennessee up in field position. It's literally a 10 to 14 point swing, that turnover. So they're not getting your generic turnovers either. They've been very, very fortunate in my estimation.
Well, I mean, you look at the Titans and we know game plans oftentimes get thrown out the window when you face a little level of adversity. And over this 3-game road winning streak, the Titans have yet to face a 2-possession deficit. So they haven't been forced to abandon Derrick Henry. They haven't been forced to go away from the fastball and use off-speed pitches to try and get back in football games. And we talked about it all season long. How would Baltimore fare if their ground game wasn't working or they had to play from behind. We saw it on full display. And you mentioned the Titans' big turnovers. We can go even one step further, the game against the Patriots, getting that goal line stand before the half and trailing 13-7 instead of being down 17-7. Maybe the single most defining moment for Tennessee this postseason. They carried that momentum forward. But you look at this game, Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes, the first meeting, you talked about him coming back from that knee injury. Still threw for 440 yards. Tyreek Hill was targeted 19 times, had 11 catches for 157. Now, Travis Kelce only had 7 for 75, and ultimately, Tennessee's going to have to pick their poison. We saw what the Houston Texans wanted to do. They neutralized Tyreek Hill, and Travis Kelce went absolutely bonkers, even with the lower body injuries, ultimately accounting for 3 touchdowns. And I think if you're Kansas City, yeah, Damien Williams is a nice piece to run the football, but go out there and attack the Titans in space. Force this secondary to try and make plays, because when we look on the other side of the ball, Tennessee, if they can't get Derrick Henry on track, can Ryan Tannehill do enough in the passing game against this Chiefs underrated secondary to throw and maybe finally get A.J. Brown off a milk carton onto a football field from his 2-catch, 13-yard performance so far through 2 playoff games?
Well, Tannehill's only got $160, so it's tough. And to your point, like, you're right, Chiefs aren't going to be like this run-heavy team. But we talked about getting Damien Williams back and where that run game would be a factor, and it would be in the red zone where Kansas City was struggling. They get Dame back, got 3 touchdowns, they go 6 for 7 in the red zone. So I think maybe even a little undervalued from that perspective, because where Kansas City's offense struggled a little bit this year was the red zone. Getting Dame back should be big there.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at Tennessee, I mean, this team has been very good on 3rd and 4th down, good keeping opponents out of the red zone, but when teams actually get to the red zone, the Titans are ranked 31st in the regular season in red zone defense, allowing opponents to score touchdowns 68% of the time. The only team that ranked lower than Tennessee was the Houston Texans, and as we saw last week, Kansas City found themselves in the red zone plenty of times, scoring touchdowns. So offensively, Payne, and you're out there trying to attack this Kansas City defense, we can talk about the impact potential absence yet again of Chris Jones. But if you're the Titans, we know they want to establish Derrick Henry. We know they've run the ball 70% of the time through 2 playoff games with their offensive snaps. But do you consider letting Tannehill throw a little bit more, working off of play action early to use the pass game to set up the run? Or do you just go back to what you know best and attack the Chiefs trying to run the football and run that bowling ball into what Kansas City will probably play an 8, maybe 9-man box if they can?
Listen, like, I'm not trying to be, pass the ball every single down guy. I'm actually pretty old school. Defense, hard hits, running the ball. That stuff is fun to me. I love watching boring football and cashing unders. And running the football, you know, I think it does help in controlling the game and helping, you know, create a style which you want to implement. And so I think, inevitably, the Titans are going to run the ball here. But it's really interesting to me how we are starting to factor things. And the bottom line is this. Like, we're now at a point where every single play you run on offense has an expected point value. And a lot of people are kind of hyping it up. It's really caught on this season, right? EPA. And some believe it's fractionally better to use than success rate in terms of projecting. For me, I like, you know, trying to get my hands on everything and factoring in all elements. But the point is here, more often your expected points per play increase when passing rather than running, right? Passing just leads to a higher EPA than running. It's really that simple. So it's like, yes, it'd be great to stop Derrick Henry, but we think about this all the time. It's like Moneyball. It taught us, right? It doesn't matter how you get to first base, whether you take a hit, you get plunked or you walk. The goal in football, right, is to pick up as many yards as you can any way you can, because inherently more yards mean more points. So you go back to the first matchup in Week 10. Henry has 188 rushing yards, Todd, right? The Titans are still trailing at home by 9 late in the fourth quarter against a hobbling Mahomes. Henry's projected to have, I believe, 103.5 is the number I'm seeing here in the props market. So it's like, okay, Chris Jones might not play, and that could be very true, like, Andy Reid was pretty non-committal. He came out and was like, hey, he wasn't even close to playing last week. He couldn't even push off. So he said he was really unsure that he would be able to play here against the Titans. So to me, it's like, how many more yards can Derrick Henry have? Like, he's got to be able to run the ball here. So what else can happen? Right, he had 188 last game, last time these guys played. I just, when you're projecting this, it's like, yeah, they should be able to run. Obviously, Steve Spagnuolo's goal is going to be to stop Henry. You know, it's going to be really difficult to do. We know the Chiefs have some issues defending ground games. You just look, you know, as a whole throughout the season, 53% of runs have graded successful. If you look at trending metrics, which a lot of people are now starting to do, and it'll appear that the Chiefs have done much better late, and they have. Since week 11, KC's trending to be slightly below average stopping the run, but I think there's a bigger question. Did they really improve stopping the run, or did their opponents get much weaker? And I think it's probably a little bit of the latter. Fourth easiest schedule of run offenses the Chiefs have faced since week 11. This is certainly a more difficult task here. I think Spagnuolo is going to have to come up with something completely different, right, than the game plan he employed last week. If you look, they actually did a decent job stopping the run early on in that game. And then once they built the lead, it was a lot of drop seven, drop eight. KC did a good job getting pressure with only three and four guys rushing. Frank Clark was out of his mind. You're going to obviously need more guys in the box for a game like this. But again, I come back to it's like, are you going to employ the same strategy that Bill Belichick did, which was let these guys run and take away the play action pass, take away the deep in. Technically, it worked. And again, even last week, I know Tennessee scores 28, but two of them are on short fields. They really, truly drove the ball on two of their drives offensively. That was basically it. One was a really long, explosive run by Derrick Henry. So, yes, you got to stack the box. It'd be nice to have Chris Jones back. Thornhill is obviously out. Maybe there is some areas to attack within that Chiefs secondary. But I think it's vital, Todd. When Tannehill sees these loaded boxes, he's got to locate Jonnu Smith. That's where he's going to have a real advantage here. I think KC has struggled to defend tight ends again this season. Whether you're looking at quarterbacks targeting tight ends, which would imply that they're open, right? Or tight end receptions or tight end receiving yards. The Chiefs are bottom five in all those categories defending tight ends. So certainly you're not going to go away from Derrick Henry. But when you do pass, it's probably going to be Jonnu Smith finding some edges. Maybe you're attacking the vulnerabilities in the secondary on deep passes where Thornhill was really just doing so much for this Chiefs defense. We saw that exploited a little bit early on, right? There's some miscommunication with some new guys back there. They've been testing out Fuller at the safety position. So there's some miscommunication on that third and one opening drive shot where the Texans found Kenny Stills. There was a couple broken coverages without Thornhill there. So I do think there's going to be a couple opportunities in the pass game if you decide to take them for the Titans.
What do you make of the total in this campaign? We've seen it open 51, 51 and a half, some shops offshore, upwards of 53, kind of painted in the desert, some 52 and a half, and even one rogue 52 out there. I think a lot of people, when they look at the game, they go, well, if Tennessee is going to be a live underdog in this spot, you would think it has to be correlated towards the under. I think you and I have a very different mindset, because if you look at Tennessee and they're going to be live, they're going to have to score points to stay in this football game, because anyone asking this game to ultimately be decided 21-17, in my opinion, is completely deluding themselves.
So there's probably not going to be a situation like there was last week where a 10-point dog scores 28 and the total isn't going to go over in the mid-40s.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Don't get me started.
Yeah. So Tennessee is going to have to score. And very, very real money on the over at 51, which is, again, a key number. So it doesn't mean go out there like a banshee with your head cut off running to go over 53. Could still very well win. But 51 was the number, and the guys that did it got out early on Sunday night, Monday night, Sunday night, Monday morning. It'd be tough to go under this number. And I know, like, if you just look back, right, and you just took every single football game in the database that had weather, you know, in below 30 degrees, it's going to trend towards the under. But I just, the way this game's going to be played, Tennessee is going to have to score here, because I don't believe in their defense completely. And I think Kansas City is going to have some advantages here offensively. And if Kansas City does get out, right, you think about how this could potentially happen. Okay, say Kansas City gets behind. Now they're going to pass, something they actually like to do and are better at. And say Kansas City gets up. Well, now Tennessee is going to have to throw the ball. They're not going to be able to just sit on the clock even when they do run it. So, yes, the over here was pretty sharp at 51.
Two big games. Should be fun to watch Sunday afternoon. Of course, kicking off in earnest, 3:05 Eastern at Arrowhead before the nightcap at 6:40 takes you out to the Bay Area for San Francisco and Green Bay. Of course, we're not done around these parts, though, after we break both of them down. We do have one order of business, and that, of course, being the best bet, brought to you courtesy of Fox Bet, where the biggest name in sports is now the biggest name in sports betting. Download the app from absolutely anywhere. Follow your biggest lines. Plenty of baseball stuff out there and readily available as well. Real money wagering in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. Fox Bet, make the call. Download the app today. Payne, I know there's not a lot of opportunity necessarily with so few games on the board, but where are you seeing an avenue that our listeners can go and make a few dollars this weekend as we head towards the Super Bowl in your neck of the woods?
Well, I don't want to take credit for this, so let's kind of introduce this as where we're going. And you kind of brought it up, and we can talk about it. What do you think? You want to give out the future that we like?
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes the most sense. I mean, because the total, I know that we've talked about a little bit about, but hate giving it out at a number that's no longer readily available on one of these two games. 49ers, you know, we made a strong case for what we felt should be a 49ers runaway, but
yes.
You never know if the back door is going to be open there, and I don't think there's a ton of wiggle room Kansas City or Tennessee either way. So I think the future makes the most sense if what we think transpires on Sunday will play out, and a little bit of the logic behind potentially the big game and where that number could open as early as Sunday afternoon when the title game combatants are set.
So there's two ways to execute this. You could easily go and take San Francisco to win the Super Bowl plus $1.65 right now. Or you could use an approach if you have access to certain shops. And you can do this anywhere, but based on price, because there is some varying price here with this first money line, do a money line rollover. So if you look, you know, as I look at my screen here, some shops are dealing San Francisco minus 370. Some are dealing minus 335. If you're in the area where you can get San Francisco minus 335 on a rollover and you're looking at look-ahead lines of a KC-San Francisco Super Bowl matchup, you're looking at lines of pick 'em minus 1, minus 2.5. Those are really where these look-ahead lines have been. And if that is your matchup, a rollover would work better. It'd pay back about $1.85. The advantage, though, to using the future, Todd, would be that if Tennessee were to upset Kansas City, then you're sitting very pretty with Kansas City, because they are going to open up a substantial favorite. So it depends how risky you want to be. But for the purposes of this show and grading one bet, we'll use San Francisco as the future. And shop around. I've seen as low as 150. I've seen plus 165. Plus 165, I think, is going to be at a lot of the shops that our listeners use. So let's go with San Francisco Super Bowl future.
Yeah, plus 163 right now, the number currently available. For those folks in Pennsylvania and New Jersey who want to take advantage of Fox Bet's numbers, so that's out there as well. But I think the logic behind it makes an awful lot of sense. You mentioned the look ahead, and I think we saw the changing dynamic. The NFC was about a 3-point underdog going into last weekend, assuming that we were going to get a Ravens-Chiefs matchup. The Saints get knocked out, and you see a little bit of a shift as far as the power profile, as far as the NFC is concerned. Because if we're talking about San Francisco-New Orleans in this game, then it's a much different situation than where we're seeing 2-7, 7.5-point favorites instead of the chalk and the seedings hold, ultimately setting up a clash of the Titans at Hard Rock Stadium that first Sunday in February.
Clash of the Titans. Man, I don't know. I might have to go if Patty's in it.
Are you? I mean, the question I have is, I mean, will you find yourself the ability to get down to the Chiefs sideline if Patrick Mahomes is playing for his first ever Lombardi trophy?
Oof. Have a little Kevin Hart moment. Get lubed up and try to get down there to accept the trophy myself.
I mean, if you can pull that off, that would go down and bet the board history is the best thing that we could do for viral marketing. So just
which typically isn't our thing.
Just shed the bet the board t-shirt. Go body paint if Kansas City's there. And, you know, either way, even if San Francisco wins the Super Bowl, if they get there, because we'll be celebrating with all of our listeners holding that futures ticket, you could have you know, bet the board emblazoned across your chest in orange and black, our flagship colors.
There you go. There you go. I'm trying to see what we would make this, I think, man. So, yeesh. Yeah, San Francisco. San Francisco minus. Yeah, I mean, it's not quite a touchdown, but a shade below a touchdown if it were to be San Francisco, Tennessee. So, we're just higher on San Francisco than I think most people are.
We shall see what transpires. Before we let all of our listeners get out of Dodge, as we've kept the show well below an hour, which is pretty impressive for us.
Just only two games.
Just wanted to get your quick thoughts. If you saw anything Monday night in the LSU-Clemson National Championship game that surprised you.
Yeah, I had to sweat it out a little bit. Hey, didn't think we would have to do that.
You know, Dabo going for two apparently paid dividends to get to that 67-point total. But if you'd have told me that game barely goes over one of the closing numbers at 66.5 because Clemson scores one touchdown in the second half. I'm still not quite sure what that offensive game plan was when you abandoned Travis Etienne, who had one carry the final 25 minutes of the game, in what was at that point a 28-25 football game, especially knowing Trevor Lawrence had struggled to do much against that LSU secondary.
It was very odd. Think about how this game opens. It's with a trick play. And then in the first half, you have three situations where Clemson is fourth and medium or fourth and short, well into plus territory, and they decide to kick all three times, twice in the way of a punt and one long field goal. It was very odd. But yes, and you know that probably would have summed up the entire season had that game not gone over. And not to go back in time, but we timed it perfectly to where we were attempting to get this key of 65, and we ended up moving in like 32 minutes before kickoff and going over 65 at Chris. But it basically, that total wasn't a winner at any point the first 15 days or so that line was up. It was only a winner towards the bell. But you look, again, you had those three instances there where, like, Dabo decided not to be aggressive after opening the game with a trick play. You had the drop touchdown by the kid from LSU there. What the hell is his name? Jamar?
Oh, Jamar Chase.
Yep. And then it led to a missed field goal. And then you had the phantom offensive pass interference on Higgins, which wiped away a touchdown. And you had Coach O being very nice in the midst of a recruiting battle against Clemson. I think you shove a touchdown down their throat there to end the game for an emphatic stamp, but neither here nor there. So yeah, there. I mean, the game should have hit 80 pretty easily. But
that touchdown, either way, didn't impact Coach O's $1.7 million bonus that he had for bringing a national championship to Baton Rouge.
That's Joe a lot of gumbo.
Joe Burrow will get himself paid at the next level.
Yes.
Although a lot of the LSU players don't have to worry about that thanks to the generosity of Odell Beckham Jr. there at midfield.
Man, did the Bengals bork that shit.
What, you mean letting Joe Brady go to the Carolina Panthers rather than keeping him in check, in tow with Joe Burrow so the two can continue to build on the tremendous season they put forth? Why would Cincinnati ever open the checkbook for that kind of thing?
You imagine selling that package to the fans? And you're selling out season tickets today.
I can't wait for Joe Burrow, even as a native Ohio kid, to say, you know what? I don't think I want to play for the Bengals. I'm going to hold out and hope somebody else trades up for the number one pick. Yeah. That's just the kind of drama we need in the National Football League.
Man, it's brutal that ownership did not go that route in plucking Brady and making that a nice dynamic duo. Rough. Businessmen. Businessmen. These organizations are worth billions and billions of dollars. And I got to tell you, they it would shock some people. But man, they cut cords and costs at every angle.
Penny wise and pound foolish. You'd be amazed at how some of these billionaires keep their money and some of the decisions they make. But different discussion for a different day. Payne, I know our loyal listeners will be anxiously awaiting for you to invite them all over for Super Bowl Sunday if they find themselves in Miami. But we'll save those details for 2 weeks from today, right?
Funny guy.
A viewing party alongside Payne and Sider on South Beach. Come on, make it happen. Let's go.
I think that's the misconception. I don't love watching games with others. Now, it's different if I don't have money on the game.
It's not a misconception. Nobody out there thinks you do like watching games with others. I hate it myself, so I understand exactly where you're coming from.
It's tough. Yeah. Don't like to do it. We'll
see. Be down in Miami. Grab an adult beverage or two as we do the week's worth of shows for Fox and all of that good stuff. But for all of our loyal listeners, we appreciate you guys being with us from the season previews through the conference championships. Of course, one big final podcast remaining. We'll have our bye week along with the two title game combatants. We'll be back with a full props preview courtesy of Fox Bet, along with our big game breakdown 2 weeks from today. If there are any schedule adjustments, you, of course, will get wind of that before anybody else by following the Bet the Board Twitter account at Bet the Board Pod. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. And Payne, any parting shots, words of wisdom, life advice you'd like to share before we bid our loyal listeners a fond farewell?
That's it. Sky Dodge.
All right, for Payne Insider, I'm Todd Furman. Best of luck with your San Francisco 49ers futures ticket at a price of plus 160 or better, hopefully. And come Sunday afternoon in the Bay Area, we'll be one step closer to cashing that thing, and we'll see you at the window.